You're listening to A Senior Moment, the show for and about seniors. I'm Joanne Rideout. I'm here in the studio with Suzanne Berenson from Northwest Senior and Disability Services and Doug Schaefer from the Olympic Area Agency on Aging. Every month we come to you with information about senior issues. Today we're going to be talking about something very important that if you are, everyone will need one at some point in their life. It's something called an advanced directive. And if you have one, it can really make things much easier for you and your loved ones as you proceed in your health care in your life. And it's especially of concern for seniors. So why don't we start by explaining what an advanced directive is? Doug, can I ask you that?
Sure. Advanced directive is sometimes a sort of a blanket term, an umbrella term, and sometimes it's a specific document. But basically, when we talk about advanced directives, we're talking about putting something in place so that people know what sort of treatment options you want, what sort you don't want, those type of things, where you're making the decision that, okay, if I go in someplace or I pass out, they pick me up and an ambulance take me in, I need something that says, well, yeah, I want this kind of treatment, I don't want this kind of treatment, and that kind of thing. We hear about it sometimes, different people, religious beliefs, maybe, you know, they want it very clear, no transfusions and that type of stuff. If they didn't have that in place, well, what's the first thing you do? Oh, they're low on blood. Well, we need to transfuse them. So it's kind of to make sure that it's going along with your wishes. And it doesn't necessarily have to be someone that's terminal and saying, oh, you know, well, I don't want to, you know, be hooked up to all these machines, or yes, hook me up to everything you've got and invent some more because I ain't going out easy.
Mm-hmm.
Those type of ideas, but it's not necessarily that. Like you mentioned, it's sometimes good to do it when you're not facing that crisis. There's nothing on the horizon. And as much as I have told people over the years, this is a really good idea to do, it took kind of a medical blip in my history to go, yeah, I should probably follow my own advice and do something here.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat down with my wife and said, this is, you know, what I'm going to do and blah, 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 blah. Some of these require a doctor's participation and sign-off. Some of them don't. So it's just a good idea to have those in place. And there are other options, too, that we can talk about, like a durable power of attorney and that type of thing. But it's
right.
Basically, here's what I want done, here's what I don't want.
Well, I know mm-hmm. that advanced directive is something that I have for my dad, who I've talked about many times on the show, that I'm one of his caregivers, and he's in his late 90s now. And that one of the things that the medics people told us to do, the ambulance folks, was to have a paper copy of that, like, on the refrigerator with a magnet, because it's there in the house, and they can grab it. Because otherwise, if they don't have that information, they will have to do everything possible, even if the person doesn't want it, right? Isn't that true?
Sure, yeah, if they can't speak for themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, let's go there. That's because what you're talking about is the POLST, the P-O-L-S-T.
Oh, okay. So what does P-O-L-S-T mean?
It's Physician Order for Life-Sustaining Treatment.
Okay.
And that's the one that EMTs look for when they go in. So, and we were talking before the show that in Washington State, they're bright, almost day glow green. You know, very flashy. In Oregon, they're hot pink. So the thing, we don't know why it's different in each state, and you know, each state may have a different color.
I have to question that one.
Very visible.
Yeah.
But the whole thing is, yeah, it has to be a color that you can see, that grabs your attention. So, and the first place, EMTs, believe it or not, are trained to go in and look at the refrigerator uh-huh. as they pass it, because that's where they post that, to post the pulse. This is where... Some people will do it if there's a separate bedroom for them. They'll put it on the bedroom door or something. But some place where they'll see it, they can grab it. They can say, oh, yeah, well, we can't even do that in transit because they don't want that to happen or whatever. It used to be people would just have a simple DNR, do not resuscitate. But I prefer the term they're starting to use more and more now, and that's allow natural death. So there's those type of things. I knew one lady that actually had it taped to her nightgown. She went to bed every night, you know.
Oh, wow.
She said, if I'm gone, leave me gone kind of thing, you know.
Wow.
Because she wanted to make sure that if in the middle of the night something happened, they came in, even though her doctor was aware, but she was just that determined that, you know, I'm done. I've had enough. If I go peacefully, let me go peacefully.
Mm-hmm.
So those type of things... are in place. Now the POLST also it used to be they used the term extraordinary measures, and you would go into the hospital and say, do you want extraordinary measures or not? Yes or no. The first time I ran into that being changed was with my father-in-law, and we went in, and he had said he didn't want extraordinary measures. It was, you know, his 97th time in the hospital. It was towards the end of his life, and he said, tell the doctor, you know, no extraordinary measures. So I found the doctor and told him. The doctor said, well, what does that mean? And I said, I thought you knew.
Wow.
So it was kind of, that's where they were beginning to say, we need more specific instructions, because what's extraordinary to me might not be to you. So they came up with the pulse, and the pulse, I'll hold that up to the microphone so everybody can see it.
Oh, there, see? Yes, okay.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, now we all know.
Yeah. But it has things like, do you want CPR? Yes or no. Do you want comfort measures only? Do you want antibiotics? Do you want to have push oxygen or just passive oxygen? Do you want mechanical feeding through a stomach tube or something like that? Each one of those, there's a yes, no questionnaire on it, and how often would you want to have the paddles used to resuscitate you, and that kind of thing. Now, with the pulse, as I said, and it even deals with, like I said, it's assisted nutrition, antibiotics, and so on, and it's basically a page and a half.
And where would somebody get that form?
This form you can get through, you can download it for free from the Department of Health in Washington, doh.law.gov. In Oregon, it would be...
In Oregon, I just did a quick Google search, but it's on the State of Oregon website.
Okay.
Or if you do an Oregon Pulse search, you're going to get one that pulls up. Or else you get it from your doctor's office. So you don't, you know, you don't have to... Generally, you're going to be filling this out with your doctor, and then they sign off on it so they understand. You discuss what your intentions are with your physician and what you would want in a crisis. And then, you know, they'll usually sign off on it. And there's a little, and I know Oregon has like a little number sticker usually on the ones from the doctors or whatever. And they have like a number association with it. And then you have obviously the big piece of paper that's getting in the more technical ways of it. So then they always have a record of what your wishes are. But
well, when we did this for my dad, we had an attorney do it. Mm-hmm. And it says advanced directive on it. And just another option for people, my dad wanted me as his caregiver, because I have power of attorney over all of his stuff, to be the person who decided what kind of care he got. So that's also an option that you can designate somebody to say, tell them what you want them to do, because I know that what he wants.
Yeah, they're very different documents, but they can work together. They can work very similar. So if you don't have a pulse yet, I know some people that is a concern of theirs because they're told, oh, I need a pulse for my family member, but I can't get them into the doctor. That happens a lot. But if you're able to get an advanced directive put together and can somewhat get that post, you're going to hear... The medics and things like that are really going to encourage the pulse, which it makes sense because it's very clear to read. Advanced directives are not all the same. They can be very different. But the most important thing is these need to be completed while the person still has a sound mind.
Right, right.
And, you know, and that the physician's willing to listen to them and agree, you know, or they can come up with a plan together, or else if you have an attorney involved for the advanced directive, they're going to be, you're going to have to get it notarized.
Right.
And
right.
So obviously they have, your loved one has to be able to make those decisions for themselves. So these are kind of things you need to be proactive with.
Right.
Yep. And a lot of facilities, I'm sorry to interrupt, a lot of facilities too require that pulse. And if you don't have one upon moving into one, that's going to be something right up on the agenda, is to get you set up with that. So
okay.
They also do, some of them will come out if you have nothing. They'll come out and ask if you have a DPOA, which is a durable power of attorney.
Right.
And that's one that can be, like Suzanne was saying, it can be, they're not as specific as the pulse.
Mm-hmm.
It can be very general that I'm authorizing this person to make all health care decisions on my behalf if I'm unable to. And they'll come in and bring those to you, too, if you're in the hospital or something like that. They want something that they can look at and say, okay, if this patient is no longer able to respond, who makes these decisions?
Yeah, uh-huh. Okay.
The DPOA doesn't necessarily have to have the doctor sign off on it. The pulse does, because he has to document on the pulse that he's actually discussed this, you know, with the patient and so on. And people change their minds. You know, I mm-hmm. told the story before we started the show about my father-in-law again when I found out about this extraordinary measures thing. And I said, well, what about, you know, if your heart stops, do you want him to start it again? And he said, no. I started to walk away and he kind of pulled my sleeve and said, tell them they can try twice. You know, so you had to think through these things,
mm-hmm. yeah,
and make your decisions. But again, you have to realize that the doctor, if he has nothing in place, he's trained to keep you alive.
Yeah.
So,
right.
Not so much. Well, I don't want to slander doctors, but in our society, there's a section of people that believe that no matter what, you should be kept alive.
Mm-hmm.
Not quality of life, but yes. the fact that you're all alive. And as individuals, we think quality of life is pretty important.
Yeah.
So, well, and there's to get these decisions made.
And there's legal liability there for physicians, I'm sure, that if mm-hmm. they didn't do what everything they possibly could, I'm sure there are issues there mm-hmm. for them that make it yeah, more
absolutely.
Difficult. That so,
well, there's so also the dynamic that no matter what you have in there, you have your pulse, you have your DPOA, you have all of that stuff, you have the representative for that in there, they're in the hospital, they're dying, the family is summoned, the family rushes in, there's weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth and saying, no, you can't let Dad go. You can't let, well, that puts the physician in a real tough spot. Is not only is thinking about the emotional part, but again, there's liability. The family is telling them no. The designated person is saying yes.
Mm-hmm. So right. Difficult call. All around.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, so can we talk a little bit more about the power of attorney stuff?
Mm-hmm.
So, Doug, what you were saying, the well, durable and...
Yeah, there's the POA, which is just a power of attorney. Everybody's kind of familiar with that. Which is basically, I'm saying that... you have the authority to execute the decisions I tell you to execute. You can do that in my name. That means that I'm clear of thought, I'm awake, I'm not, you know, in a coma or anything, and I can direct you, and you can act on my behalf because you know what I want, and I can tell you if I don't want that or whatever. So what happens with the power of attorney is that, and it's not a lifetime thing, none of this or the DPOA part, that can be stopped at any mm-hmm. time. You can decide, I don't want this anymore, I want a different person or whatever. The thing about a power of attorney is it's kind of a partnership. You know, I can't, maybe I can't get around as well as I used to, so I'm going to let you do my banking and, you know, whatever. Now, as soon as I become incapacitated, that power of attorney is worth nothing. So that's where the durable power of attorney comes in. And the durable power of attorney can be for anything. It can be for financial matters only. It can be for health care decisions only. It can be for both. It can be for everything. So it can be very specific or it can be very, very open. With my own mother-in-law, my wife is an only child. So obviously she had the power of attorney and the DPOA. So because she knew that she would do the decisions that she wanted to do, and I would talk about it and do that. But the durable power of attorney, and you can even write that up so it only comes into effect if the client or the individual is incapacitated. So you're not going to make decisions for me as long as I'm awake, lady. I'm mm-hmm. just telling you.
Mm-hmm.
So
sure.
If I become incapacitated, then yeah, you know what I want, and you can go ahead and do it.
And it seems, just from experience of working with individuals, that a lot of people do have some sort of power of attorney set up or durable power of attorney or advanced directive, but quite often individuals don't know what they have. They will just call it a POA. Oh, yeah, I have a POA. Well, it may not technically be a power of attorney. It might be an advanced directive, or it might be the durable. And they don't really know. So, and plus, I could have a POA. Doug could have a POA. You could have a POA. And our documents read differently. They're not all apples to apples. So I always invite people to get it out, see what it is that you do have, and make sure it's current to what your wishes are. And, you know, because that's something that when the time comes or a crisis comes, those come in pretty handy to have. So,
yeah.
You know, and then you realize, oh, wait, I really technically can't make these decisions for my mom. Right. You know, or you're my dad. And so you have to review them.
Well, and even just I can share an experience that I had with power of attorney, was just trying to pay a bill for to get something straightened out with my father's internet service. Actually, it was his satellite, wherever he got his internet from. I guess it was the telephone company, wasn't working, and I wanted somebody to come out to the house to get the internet working, and they wouldn't deal with me because I didn't have a power of attorney. And I made the mistake I could have done it all online, but I actually talked to a human being. And so it was just an exercise in frustration. But I finally ended up faxing them the power of attorney stuff. But anyway, the bottom line is, to just take all that drama out of it, is that if you want to conduct that business, you have to show those papers to every vendor, every bill collector, every person that your loved one has a contract with. In order to deal with them, you have to give them a copy of that power of attorney form, and they have to have it on file.
And here's an interesting thought to put it in there. Even if you're married to an individual, technically, if you don't have a power of attorney and some of those things set up, you may not have the ability to make some of these decisions.
Wow.
So if you don't have shared accounts, if you, and that's very typical nowadays,
it is.
And people not even married, they just are significant others, live together, you just don't think about it. Yeah, you do things together, or you take care of this, I take care of this. But really, in an emergency, you could really, be put in a bind.
Yes.
With making choices that need to be done, whether that's medical or financial.
Well, it's getting, like you said, it's getting more like that. Mm-hmm. It used to be, oh, yeah, we know you're married and dum-da-dum-da-dum. Well, my wife still runs into things because she does all our bookkeeping, accounting stuff. And she'll say, well, you'll have to call these people so I can pay the bill. And I said, well,
you handle it.
Why can't I? What do you mean I have to call them? Well, the account's in your name. When we opened it was in your name.
Oh, yeah,
and
right.
And they won't let me deal with it. Mm-hmm. And really, seems like they would take money from anybody.
Yes, it's like when you're trying to pay a bill. I mean, you're not trying, but at any rate,
sometimes it depends who you're talking to, within the company. Sure. You might get somebody that's easy to deal with, but you might have somebody that really follows the rules, which is fine, too.
Yeah.
Well, and that's why it's important to not only have those documents in place, but for you to know where they are.
Right.
And to have copies for whoever is doing the power of attorney with you, that they will have copies. And, a lot of times people will carry them, in their purse or in something that they carry around with them all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's here. Mm-hmm.
Well, I have it on a memory stick, and I have it on my computer, and I have it everywhere, because I've been through so much really irritating stuff relating to this that I have it. Oh, how would you like it? I can send it to you 5 different ways.
Sure. And we were talking about that beforehand. It's like we give out all this advice to individuals, and then we realize, oh, wait, do I have that in place?
Yeah.
Because I know I need to take my own advice with this show.
Oh, I know.
Because you just think, if something happens, does my husband know my accounts? Probably not. That would be helpful for him.
Yeah.
And, I am 40, so you think, oh, yeah, you're young and whatnot. But, emergencies can happen anytime. Yeah. You can become incapacitated anytime. We can't predict our future. So the best way is everybody needs to protect themselves.
Early on, we did
plan.
My wife and I did reciprocal DPOAs.
Oh.
But it was because I had been working with it, and it, like you said, it dawned on me I should probably take my own advice.
Yes. Yeah, that's always good.
Slow down and take your own advice.
Yeah. When does that happen?
In Washington State, you can go to washingtonlawhelps.org, and you can download those DPOA and DPOA docs for free.
Mm-hmm.
And so with the Pulse thing, like I said, it took a blip in my history for me to realize I should probably have that, too.
Do you have one set up?
Yes.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow.
So, of course, I have a different doctor now. Okay, I need to revisit that.
Oh, brother.
We have to talk about this right now. But, that's another thing that, I just realized when we were talking about it, if you change doctors, you might want to revisit those forms.
Yeah,
sure.
But it does. There's so many things out there now, and we're such a willing to sue society.
Yes,
and culture,
right.
That the more you have in place, the better it is. It actually gives the doctor more freedom to act like you want him to act and on your behalf, and it also makes things a lot more clear. So,
yeah, and this information might be pretty overwhelming for people, and I always just invite, you can get these forms off the internet, or you could go probably even to Staples or an office store and find find the forms there. But, you know, if you have a lot of questions, make an appointment with, you know, maybe a family attorney or, you know, a financial advisor that deals with this a lot, and they can kind of find out what your needs are and help you with what is the most appropriate. And we have booklets in our office. I'm sure you guys have some sort of resources as well that can just give people it's a guide basically of websites and phone numbers. And it talks about conservatorships and guardianships and advance directives and posts and all of that. It's a very small pamphlet, but it will give you phone numbers and websites to go to look at more things. But quite often I'll let people have this information. And then if a lot of people, it seems like they have a little family attorney that they can turn to. So I always invite them to give them a call and check up on what they have.
There's also a lot of people do that as a package.
Mm-hmm.
They decide it's time to do a will. Yeah. They'll do a will and then they'll do the advance directives.
Right.
That kind of stuff too.
That's a great idea.
And, I'm not sure how the, if you have free legal over here for seniors or.
There's a legal aid.
Okay, in our offices we have, it's called SLAC, Senior Legal Advice Clinic.
Oh, okay.
Anyone over 60 can meet with an attorney at our office.
Oh, that's great.
Mm-hmm. It's all civil matters only. You know, if you stuck up the bank, he's not going to help you.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want a will, he's there for you. But you call our offices and make an appointment. As you can imagine, since it's free, a free attorney, we're booked out a few months in advance.
Yeah, so I would imagine.
Oh, I like that. That's neat.
Do that. Come in and they'll do the will, and then they'll be talking about what about medical things. And so sometimes they'll download the documents themselves and then bring it in and say, "How do I fill this out?" Or "What's the best way to do this?" So that's another option. But yeah, the attorney is, especially if you're really concerned about, I would say, concerned about traveling out of your area, out of state, or into another country, or whatever. Because actually in Washington State, you can do a POA and a DPOA and not have it certified or registered or anything like that.
Oh, wow.
However, it's a good idea to have it notarized and
right,
certified
and right.
all that, because you're probably not going to just stay in your town.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So we encourage people to have that done, especially, like I said, if you're traveling around everywhere.
Yeah.
Documentation. It's acceptable.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's really important for people to understand, too, that you can stipulate different things in those as well. Because I know sometimes it really is scary for someone, or maybe your parents aren't ready to give up. They're so scared, like, I don't want to give up my financial freedom. And they're so afraid of that possibly occurring, having these documents. Well, these documents are set up to protect you.
Right.
You know, so that's what you have to remember. And you can go to the professionals to help you weed it through, and you know,
and hopefully, you know, people who are in the position of giving that power of attorney right to someone has someone they can trust.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I mean, that's been one great thing between my father and I, is that we really trust each other, and so he has always trusted me to handle things in the way that he wanted them to do. But that's not true for everybody.
Yeah, if you don't have that, then there's different things set up with the state. That's getting a little bit more complicated, but we do run into that. And so some people do need to have, like, appointed health care representatives you know, guardians and conservatives. And
yeah. But having I know we're sort of covering a lot of ground here, but the topic of wills, I know that when my dad had his will done up, it was just an interesting process to find out how Oregon handles things like when